Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it?
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know if you join us on a regular basis, the slogan for this show, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, with the along with increasing market share for African-American-owned renewable energy companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and underemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally, also to educate the African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. This show is also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, which you're listening to that initiative over the World Wide Web, over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We can be heard on iTunes. We are streaming Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a very, very exciting show for you today. We're supposed to be joined by our guests. We're still waiting for them to come into our green room so we can bring her right on into our living room and have this discussion. This conversation this morning, ladies and gentlemen, is a historic conversation. So while I'm waiting on my guests to sort of get in here, we'll be talking with Ms. Shalala Marcet, Chief of Minority Business and Workforce Development Division at the and Special Advisors to Mrs. Shalanda Baker at the Department of Energy. Now, let me get back here and check in to see if he, I have my guest on board this morning with me. I'm going to set the table for it. Good morning, Ms. Marcet. Good morning. Well, I'm thinking that's Mrs. Marcet that was joining me, and it wasn't. But at this point in time, anyway, let me give you a little background on our scheduled guest today. Mrs. Marcet, Shalanda Marcet, is Chief of Minority Business and Workforce Development Division at the U.S. Department of Energy, located within the Office of Economic Impact and Diversity. She is a highly sought-after collaborator. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back here on the air of Solar Now in the Future with our economic impact on Black America. As I was indicating, I'm going to continue to set stage for my guest. She'll be calling in very, very shortly. I think I've been joined by one caller. Okay, I've just been joined by my guest, Mrs. Shalonda Marcet. Good morning, Mrs. Marcet.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
Great. Well, welcome to the airways of Solar Now in the Future with the Economic Impact on Black America. I was just, for my listening audience, I was just sort of setting the stage in reading your bio. You've done quite a bit, young lady, in your short period of time blessed on this plane called Planet Earth.
I've been out here living.
Yeah, you've been sought after collaborators and co-conspirators in the clean energy technology spaces. Most likely, she hails from Boston, Mass, as a teacher of 11th and 12th graders. Now, that's dear to my heart because I spent about 10 years teaching high school here in the District of Columbia, so kudos, because one thing about it, my mother was a teacher, and that sort of spared me on to understand the disciplines of the academic world. So with that being said, delivering a curriculum of engineering with energy in mind, she served roles in higher education, including enrollment services, project manager in global transportation as the director and affiliated relations. Young lady, I'm going to bring you right on in to the conversation this morning because I've got you here in live and living color. Now, why don't you sort of share with our listening audience, you know, who you are, what brought you into the energy sector, your interest, and how did you land at the Department of Energy?
Oh, that was a journey. That is a loaded question. So I guess we should start when I was working in higher ed. I looked around. Enrollment was on the decline, right? So we were in a time about, 8 or 9 years ago, where we just saw the numbers dropping, right? And unfortunately, it hasn't done a huge uptick. But I said, I need something stable, right? I wasn't getting any younger. But I also wanted something that was still in an innovative space where I could be around smart people. And a friend of mine said, hey, there's this career fair. And I said, okay, what am I signing up for? But it was for a major utility company in the Northeast. And so I went, my best friend and I, we get all dressed up, we go, and they don't like me, but they love her. And I'm going, wait, here's my friend telling me, hey, you've got a master's degree, you're really smart, you can do this kind of work, you should just come on in. And they didn't like me. And so I called my buddy back, and I was like, hey, what happened? So he said, well, let me make a call, let me see what's going on. And I said, well, apply again. And so I got a call, and I got an interview, and before I left the building, they made me an offer. And so that was sort of the start of it. And I got into the utility sector, and I looked around, and there were honestly a bunch of guys that were my age that weren't any smarter than me that I said, you know what, I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to seek out this nuclear engineering thing because when I looked around, I was like, it's one of the cleanest energies, and I think maybe it's going places. And so with that, I said, these guys are all white. Where are the Black people? Why am I the only? And I started to tell people about how much money I was making. And they were like, wait, there's what in energy? And then I got really passionate about making sure that the money that was on the table just in the utility sector didn't keep going to other folks and that people needed to be aware. So I joined the American Association of Blacks in Energy, and that got me excited when I went out to their conference, and I said, oh, I need to take over. And so I took over the local chapter, and I started really uplifting that. And, of course, you know, just working with young people is a passion for me, and so I got to raise dollars for scholarship funding and stand up new programs, and I set up a program with my current department to really look at where are the internships, right? Let's take a look at this. And I started to make sure that people knew about their opportunities. And then I got into teaching, And through the American Association of Blacks in Energy, they had asked me to come and advise them on this curriculum. They said, we know energy is important. We're seeing all these changes. How do we really make an impact for our kids to let them know? And this was a labor of love. And I said, okay, here's how you do it. You got to get them engaged. You got to meet them where they are. You got to make sure they have the information. And their teacher that they had lined up to bring that curriculum to students bailed on them at the last minute, and they asked me to teach, and I said, you all are crazy. and I said, first of all, I probably make too much money to teach, and I can't leave my job. I have a family. And they said, no, we might have some dollars for you. And thankfully, my employer at the time said, look, why don't you go part-time with us? So I reduced my hours by about 8 hours, and then I went, and I was working 2 full-time jobs. I was teaching full-time, and I was working pretty much full time. I was doing 30 hours at the utility company, and I was working teaching my 11th and 12th graders, who I still consider my students. I have since stopped teaching, but now my 11th graders are in 12th grade. They're getting ready to graduate. I will be at their graduation. But then I got a call to say, hey, would you be interested in this role? You should apply. And so I applied, and thankfully I had what they needed, and here I am. And that's how it works.
Well, you know, that's a very story around AABE, American Association of Blacks in Energy. Very, very dear friend of mine, Tracy Woods, was vice president of operations, and at the time he was with AABE. Miss Paula Glover was the director of AABE at that time, and
yeah.
I went to a workshop on actually a press conference that they were hosting here in Washington back in 2018. And the Solar Industry Trade Association director was Mrs. Abigail Harper. And I had been doing my show for this podcast for a number of years, and I had become sort of frustrated in the fact that every time I would reach out and ask someone from the Solar Industry Trade Association to come on and talk about the lack of diversity in the industry and what was the trade association doing to sort of combat that. And at this particular day, they were at the National Press Building here in Washington, D.C., and they were talking about workforce development. And, you know, you get up, and you don't mean to offend people, but I asked the question. I said, well, I don't mean any harm, and this is great information. You have all of these CEOs and these very, very brilliant folks who look like me in the room, but where are our students? I said, we got Howard University up on Georgia Avenue. We've got GW's campus into a phone. We can throw a rock and hit the top of that. We got Georgetown. We got Maryland. We got Bowie State. We got my alma mater, Morgan State, Coppin State. I'm saying, is there any way and any reason why in the future, if y'all going to host these kind of forums and talk about these opportunities for our young people, y'all can't get some of them in the room? So that didn't sit well, but I didn't really care because I'm more concerned about the next generation, because it's not about us anymore as I am a baby boomer and a proud one, but it's about your generation and my grandson who's 10 years old who's been here before. You know what I mean? He's 10
Absolutely.
Going on 100 years. So the young kids, they're so bright that you got to come straight with them. But one thing that I'm a big believer in when it comes to our young people, if you give them an opportunity to come in and listen to people who they can tell bring a lot to the table, our young people will listen. And not only will they listen, they will ask very intelligent questions. So on that note, I want to sort of jump into why I asked you to be a part of this broadcast. Recently, on February the 23rd, here in Washington, D.C., Ms. Shalonda Baker, you, the Secretary of the Department of Energy, Ms. Jennifer Granholms, and you, y'all made something happen at the Department of Energy. It was the 23rd Minority Business Enterprise Day. Now, I attended that event. It was a first-class event, and I'm not saying that because I've got you on the airwaves on my platform, but it was. But what I was impressed, was impressed upon me, it gave some of our African American solar installation and design firms an opportunity to come to Washington, to DOE, and talk to some of the contract officers to hear about the opportunity. So could you sort of go into what that they did and what it meant to you and how it came about?
Absolutely. So I started this role in August of 2022, and I was in sort of discovery mode, and it was strategic, right? I needed to learn where the dollars were, where the barriers were, and what I realized about 2 months in was that we're not talking to the public as the Department of Energy, right? You know, some of us are out in the world a lot, but our contractors often, contracting officers or grant officers, they're not out here, right? And there's obviously some rhyme and reason to that, but how are folks supposed to know if we just throw it on a website? DOE has had a past history of just saying people will read it, right? But our folks need to be educated. You have to go to them. It's kind of like, you know, if you and I are asked to go to a party, we need a frame of reference. I'm going to call the person that invited me and say, who's all over there, right? Like, I need to know who's there, what's going on before I take the time to really invest and go through all the trouble of getting dressed and showing up. So I said to my boss, Director Baker, I said, listen, February 23rd, I want to blow the doors off of this thing. Can we do it, right? We need to bring businesses in here. We make it undeniable that these minority-owned businesses exist, and we need to educate them by way of the folks responsible for these dollars. And that's what we did. We brought in about 400 businesses into the Department of Energy, into our space. We did some breakout sessions that had really valuable presentations, but my favorite part was the networking. When folks really got a chance to sit down and talk to folks about what dollars were available and if they really qualified, right? We told folks what they needed to do to be able to do business with us. We told them where the dollars were. So it sort of demystified the department as a whole. It was really impactful. But for me, it was a way to prove the federal government wrong. When folks said to me, well, these companies just don't exist, I was able to show them and say, talk to them, and you will see that they're ready and they're here, that they exist. And so to me, it was a win already. And in only being here 6 months, it was a massive win for us.
Well, let me say this. As president of the National Association of Blacks in Solar, and I'm blessed, I see I have my vice president, he's listening to the show this morning, Mr. Will Shirley from Jackson, Mississippi. We have been struggling for a number of years to try to circle the wagons because over 11,000 firms doing business in the specific in the solar arena industry, we have less than 50 African-American-run firms, and most of those are not installed companies. You have developers, but when you put all the numbers together, we got less than 50. And when we're talking about over 11,000 firms, we're not talking about a lot. So
right.
When I began to look at what brought solar industry to where it was a disaster that happened in New Orleans. It was called Katrina. It was a gentleman called Van Jones, who was an MSNBC commentator, who was served at that time, was coming in with President Barack Hussein Obama, where we went to the polls in untold numbers. And black folks, we put the first African-American president into office. Now, in 2007, the year before Barack was elected, Van Jones did something that nobody else did. He wrote the Green Jobs Act, and he got it codified through the House and the Senate, through Congress. Until an industry is codified, it cannot grow. So there's nothing new about solar and renewable energy. It's been around since the early part of the space age. Matter of fact, Jimmy Carter had solar panels on the White House. Reagan came in and took them down. So the bottom line is it was our genius again saving this country just when Barack came in, and that legislation resulted into the Green Jobs Act, $500 million that went out, $10 million went to each state for workforce development training, including the District of Columbia. The problem was from the time that money hit the street during Barack's time and the companies that exist, I asked Mark Davis, who is a founding member of our organization, the National Association of WDC Solar here in Washington, D.C., and he does workforce development training. I said, Mark, how much money of that $10 million did you see? He started laughing. So I knew right then if we had a serious, serious problem with the issue of revenue, grants and opportunities coming out the door, but very few of these dollars are reaching out African-American-based firms. And as I began to do more and more interviews over this platform, Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America, I began to learn of the challenges that exist for the few firms that we have in this arena. And I said, I've got to get a way to do something about it. Now, when I began to look at the reports back in 2015, which was put out by the Solar Foundation, which takes our tax dollars to track these numbers, I saw back then we were around 5% of the industry in 2015, and the numbers grew very, very slowly. But the Hispanic community, because I always sort of look at where we are versus them, because, you know, there've always been these so-called unseen quotas put on African folks of African descent coming in this country. So our brothers and sisters from the Hispanic community coming across the border have larger numbers. So I looked at it, and it was around 13%. Now I understand it's around 20%. I had the privilege of listening to another event that was put on by your office back on February the 15th, the Hispanic Legislative 2023 conference, and Senator Alex Padilla from California made some very, very interesting comments to me. He said in his few short comments, we make up about 20% of the actual workforce of the installers, but the middle management in the industry is still about 55% white men. And when you begin to look at the numbers with women, has increased in this industry, but there has been a very lack of diversity, and your organization has been charged with that. So I'm going to sort of flip the switch this morning, and I want to asked you a question that I couldn't get to. Y'all have something called the Community Benefits Plan, and in that y'all are sort of charged with and defining what equity and diversity is. So could you sort of talk about some of those things, such as looking at community agreements for workforce development funding, advancing diversity, equity, inclusion, accessibility, as well as pre-apprenticeship programs and pre-apprenticeship readiness programs. If you could sort of, I'm putting a lot on your plate at one time because you're instructor, okay? So if you could sort of touch upon those things this morning, because I think that the work, and I know the work, the mammoth responsibility, young lady, that you and Miss Baker have on your shoulders. And I do this because y'all are doing a hell of a job over there, but Sharonda said something that was very, very, very touching to me. She said, look, and she told everybody in that room on the 23rd last month, y'all out there, you in this room have to hold us accountable. So with that being said, thank you for coming on this platform and sharing this information. So could you touch on some of those things I just brought up?
Absolutely. So I love the fact that we have these community benefits plans. Essentially, any of the IRA dollars that come out require that you submit with your proposal for any of the dollars a community benefit plan. And it becomes contractual. So essentially, you need to list things like who are going to be your subcontractors and how does that help community? Are you going to work with schools? Are you going to work with higher education? What does that look like? The thing that's most important is that it is worth 20% of your score for the application. That is crucial. We all know if you lose 20% on a test, that's not the grade that you really want if you're trying to do well, right? So if you have, let's say, legacy companies that continue to apply and they don't even know what potential community benefits they could offer, right, they're going to drop in their score. It gives others the opportunity to step up and really actually impact the community, right? So when I look at this, I'm like, okay, this is another opportunity. But what's crucial is that you can now have merit reviewers that are diverse, right? They look at that and say, well, this sounds great, but when I look at, let's say, Hillam, Nebraska, that has, you know, a population of 1,000 people, for example, and we're doing a project there, and you say, well, there's no community to really impact. No, there's an urban league a town over. There's a large community of black folks that are considered disadvantaged due to circumstance and situation, right? There's a 36 points that sort of qualifies that group as disadvantaged that we took some time to really define within Justice 40. So you can no longer say, well, there's nothing to impact there. There are people there. There are communities that are considered disadvantaged that you need to help as of, and a large part of that is with your subcontractors. You need to commit to it in writing, and therefore we can hold you accountable if you don't. That's the thing, right? The community benefits plan along with the application, we're looking to push that they are public-facing. So then companies, and this is just sort of some help that I tell folks all the time, is start to target them. If there's a prime that you've never worked with and they have a community benefits plan and they list that they're going to work with such and such company, that's great, but they can add to that, right? You should be a part of that if it's in your community. Why would you not? So that, for me, was a strong win. You know, the harder part is making sure that we have all of our contracting officers really going through and back and auditing those folks that do get contracts to make sure that they're living up to what they put in writing. But we have to leverage it, right? So I'm pushing to just open up and do random audits like, hey, did you actually work with that company that you said you were going to? Did you actually work with that higher education institution? If you didn't, what's the repercussion of that, right? Do we give you an opportunity? Probably to sort of fix it if we tell you once. But by the second time, we cannot move forward with that contract. You didn't do what you were supposed to do. And I don't care if you're white, black, in between. If you commit to it and it's contractual, I can then hold you to it. So that was a big deal for us to have those embedded. But that's part of a lot of all of the IRA dollars that are coming in. So that gives me a little bit of hope that there will be forward progress just based on community benefits plans.
And that would be what we would be calling the community agreement. Agreements. Okay. Now, in the area of apprenticeships and apprenticeship readiness programs, what are they? I mean, through DOE, I mean, is there specific amounts of funding through the RIA our African-American-based firms can apply if they want to implement workforce development training programs in their region?
So they are not specific to, hey, this is set aside just for African-Americans to apply for, but it's embedded in any of the workforce development areas that we need. So there's some for wind, there's some for solar, right? We want to sort of develop industry, basically. When government starts to invest in things, the economy starts to boom, right, for that area in particular. So we looked at it. I call him Brother Joe, right? That's sort of our inside thing, but President Biden, really has pushed to make sure that we have 15% for trades be dedicated to union workers, right? And that is a good thing, but we know that we have had history with unions and not protecting Black folks or not being inclusive of women in particular, that we are working very closely with them to make sure that that changes. Right, we are in constant communication with them to say, here's what you need to do to make sure that you have relationships that are strong and supportive within this industry. You know, the other side to this is with any of our workforce stuff, there's also a community benefits plan. How are you going to do this? So that's an easy solution to say it has to be done, right, with equity. So that is, for me, has been the biggest area. The workforce dollars, I'm watching very closely to see what rolls out. I'm interested in some of the newer technology of what workforce will look like. There's a lot of incubators and accelerators out there. For me, what I see is that if we don't start ensuring that we are investing in innovation with Black folks in particular, what does that look like for our workforce 20 years from now in the energy space? We are losing great minds to other industries because I'm going to be honest with you. I know we're recording this and somebody may be mad at me, but energy and agriculture, two areas that we need people, they're not sexy, right? They're not as appealing as they can be, and we have to market it right. We do amazing things behind the doors of DOE in industry. We have incredible technology that young people don't know about that is here, and we need them to elevate that and take it to the next level over the next 20 years. But if we don't include them, if we don't make it appealing to them, we're going to lose them to other industries, and we will be left behind the world, right? We're trying to still be the number one force in the world for innovation and technology. That's something that keeps me up at night.
Well, to backstop what you're saying, the Secretary of Department of Labor was on talking about they have a million jobs. 45% of these opportunities don't require college degrees. They require what they call NAPCEP certifications for electricians, for EV charging and wiring, construction, for installers, energy auditors. So I'm right there with you with that. But there is a there are always tie-ins. Now, what I mean about the tie-ins is that the agencies, y'all work in the six federal agencies, y'all work in collaboration. Now, last year, around about this time, I was working with, through our organization, the National Association of Blacks and Solar. We were able to successfully pull together a national collaboration with Tougaloo College as our lead fiduciary. We had Mr. Will Shirley of Sundial Solar out of Jackson, Global Apprenticeships out of Atlanta, Georgia. Only African-American nonprofit that had, run by young African-American brothers who have a contract with Department of Labor to place our young people in renewable energy jobs after they finish those NAPCEP certifications. We have Ms. Chanel Menefit of Columbus, Georgia, who was a part of this, with Ms. Mark Davis of WD Solar here in Washington, and Mrs. Cherie Brooks of Power 52. They have an outstanding workforce development training program. Now, we went after a $19 million grant through EDA under the Good Jobs Challenge. Now, the concerns for me is this. When I look at the fact that $500 million went out that door, out of $500 million, we had 8 HBCUs that had applied with 11 different applications for workforce development training. Out of that pool of 529 applications, the issue of competition comes to play. And in America, we understand it's called, it ain't what you know, it's who you know, but in Washington, D.C., it's called how deep is your pockets with your lobbyists. Now, we understand how Congress plays a role in determining, because they have the power of the purse, who gets what, why, and how much. That's what politics is about. So we understand the nature of the beast. But what was very concerning to me was out of that $500 million, you only two applications out of the 11 were around energy for HBCUs. The one submitted by North Carolina A&T, which was awarded $23.7 million, which was the only funding that went to an HBCU or nonprofit that I could identify. Now, right here in our state, the state of Maryland received $27 million for workforce development training. The reason why I am saying this to our listening audience, I like to connect the dots to understand how they can support what y'all are doing at Department of Energy, is the fact that James Rutkowski, the Assistant Secretary of the Department of Labor, under Governor Hogan, that just went out, 2019, I was privileged to be at an energy summit here at the University of Maryland. And he said to me, he said, but Fay, it's off the record. He said, but we from Department of Energy alone, we will receive a very large sum of funding come February, let me say July 1. And he said it was over $100 million that would be coming to the state of Maryland. He said, but Fay, this is the problem. Once the money got to the state coffers, he said the state legislatures only approved $8 million of that to come to us. We do the training through the Department of Labor. He said, I got 23 counties in the state. He said, I need $3 million for each county just to come close to putting the apprenticeships and the things in place that we need for the state of Maryland. He said, they only approved $8 million and didn't tell us how to spend that. So a lot of times we have to explain these things to our listening audience to get them to understand, even when you are working as hard as you are working diligently at the Department of Energy to get the information out about this, and once this money goes out the door, once it hits to the state coffers, but if the local, because all politics are local, if the local delegates or representatives don't understand energy, don't understand what needs to be happening, because they have to be brought up to speed and educated around these issues. And I know that it can be very, very quite challenging, but on the 23rd of February of last month, you made history, the agency made history, when you made an announcement that $6.3 million would be going to the Blacks in Solar Organization, Black Owners of Solar Services, which is made of about 12 companies. I was very, very pleased that they were able to get that grant. Could you go into a little detail about that opportunity and how that came about, and also talk about the other announcement that was made, which was historical, about the National Alliance of Blacks in Business, the Department of Energy and Minority Development signed the MOU, and how does this impact DOE meeting its goals for the Justice 40 initiative and Justice Executive Order 13985, which was one of the first things that President Biden did when he came to office, which gave rise to the Justice 40 Initiative. Now, I know I'm putting a lot on your plate, genius, but I know you can handle this morning. So I wanted to sort of throw that in to sort of give our listening audience some idea of how important this work is, sister, that y'all are doing at DOE. Would you please elaborate?
Absolutely. So just a level set, Justice 40 is an executive order, and there's some really key language in here that everybody needs to understand. Essentially, it says 40% of the overall benefits of certain is a key word, certain federal investments, including investments in clean energy, energy efficiency, clean transit, affordable sustainable housing, training and workforce development, the remediation and reduction of legacy pollution, and the development of clean water infrastructure must, keyword there, must flow to disadvantaged communities. What's important is that word disadvantaged, as well as must, and as well as certain. So the disadvantaged communities piece is important. There were a group of folks at DOE, and I was not there for this portion of it, but my understanding is that it's composed of 36 different points that would qualify as disadvantaged communities. The sort of common denominator for these qualifiers is low income, right? It also considers things like, is there a public transit line? Is there a higher rate of cancer and asthma? Are there more single-parent households in these communities? And so it's important to understand that piece to it. It's also important that word certain. When we say 40% of the overall benefits of certain federal investments, really we're talking about the covered programs, that list that I rattled off there, climate change, clean energy, energy efficiency, and the covered investment part to it is really federal grants, procurement spending that includes discretionary budget, authority, direct and mandatory spending and formula funding, as well as financing. And so what we identified was that there were 144 programs within the department that are subjected to Justice 40. And so we can now start to pull information and say, did you hit the numbers? Did you make sure that 40% of the benefits went to disadvantaged communities? So that's the importance of Justice 40 as it relates to all of this. On February 23rd, we did sign a memorandum of understanding with the only federal agency dedicated solely to minorities, and that is called MBDA, Minority Business Development Agency. There are over 44 sites nationwide. What they do is they help minority-owned businesses. They have some unique qualifiers. This is important to mention for those folks who have never heard of them. They deal with minority businesses that are Native, Black and brown, Hispanic, the Asian population, but they do not qualify just women, okay? There's an undertone to that. It's important to recognize what they did. There was some legislation that went through that made them permanent. So they're not just going to go away based on who's in office. That was massive, right? That we didn't have to fight for it year over year to see whether or not they were going to continue to get dollars to continue all of their nationwide sites. With them, we can now share information. That's a big deal. For years, they were only able to deal with minority-owned businesses that were operating at $1 million or more in revenue. They then, over the last year, dropped that down to $500,000. This year, they took the doors off, and they said, we will work with any minority-owned business, and we'll get you up to speed on how to do business with the federal government. They have procurement centers that specialize just in doing procurement business with the federal government, and this is all agencies. This is not unique to the Department of Energy. They also have manufacturing centers, right, that you can sort of lean on if you're thinking about going into manufacturing for their resources, and they can show you how to do it. They have everything that you need to be successful. And they are incredibly dedicated people. My partner in crime, co-conspirator over there, is Angela Washington, and she's amazing. Mr. Bethia, you gotta get with her. I'll make sure that you all get in touch. But we signed that MOU on the 23rd, and behind the scenes, we had been already working together very diligently. We said, you know what, we're going to partner. We're going to go to every single site this year across the nation to make sure that we have partnerships so that when we leave, you know, we come in, we do our presentation, we tell you where the dollars are, we tell you how to do business. You can then stay in that location and work with their technical assistance, right? You will get the services that you actually need to engage in these opportunities. It's not just empty. I don't just tell you where the money is and then say, figure it out. We actually have people in these locations that is all they do is provide assistance to business owners, minority business owners, to get these dollars. So that was impactful for me, that now my job is a little bit easier because I have people in places across the nation that I can tap into. And they're already vetting companies for me. They're helping me through that process because it's massive, right? But the next part that I was incredibly passionate about was getting off the ground an ecosystem. We wanted to make sure that when anybody in the department said, hey, we need a business that does this or that, and they need to be minority owned, right? We want to make sure that we're diversifying, that we didn't just have to go through a database. We could tap into something that was ours, something that we could trust, and say, give us a business that does this, that's certified, that knows what they're doing, that has the grant writers to support them, that has everything they need to actually apply. Something that was just in the ecosystem already of energy that could also have private capital investment, that had connections to state and local funding, that it wasn't 100% reliant on us. So we did that with BOSS, and that is what we're creating out in the world. We're going to start in North Carolina, and to your point, we know North Carolina A&T just got $23 million from us, and I think they actually got a little bit more in a separate grant, if I remember correctly. But don't quote me on that, party people, right?
Well, they did get several grants. They had about four different applications in through EDA. I've talked to one of the vice presidents at North Carolina A&T because I'm from down in that area. So I've been monitoring what they're doing. My concerns is that their partners were Siemens and Duke Energy. And one of the things that it's been a pet peeve for me and something that I'm going to bring up is that we go right back to legislation. When we're talking about regulated and deregulated markets, they have the utmost importance as it relates to the energy industry, Shalev, which I know you are very aware of that. In the Deep South, they're regulated markets. And many of the renewable portfolio standard legislation, net metering legislation, and a lot of things that need to be passed by those state legislators in those regulated markets haven't taken place because the gas and oil lobbies have over the years pushed back against renewables because they don't want to lose market share. We understand that too. It's the nature of business in competition. But the bottom line is in these southern states, the large utility companies are building these large scale utility farms, power plants. And
yes.
Our small African-American contractors are not getting these opportunities. So if we have a situation which is the 2 million-pound Godzilla in the room, which is the utility companies have deactivated 14 million U.S. citizens who have PV systems on their roofs, their meters, that means to my listening audience, that means they've cut your meter off, and those energy credits that are being generated every day are still being generated, but they've been taken by the utility company and sold over the REX market. Now, by the time that the U.S. Attorney's Office step into it and about this data sharing issue, and I've seen the correspondence that my Senator Van Hollen wrote to your boss, Mrs. Jennifer Grant Holmes, of February 22nd, 2023, asking your agency to look into that because it undermines everything you're trying to attempt to do in the solar industry. If the utility companies can cut off the meters and divert those credits and sell those, and those who need it the most can't take advantages, and it's on top of their roof. So that's not an issue where we're going to be able to solve on this platform today, but I want to bring that up to say how it impacts on our smaller firms that have to depend on rooftop solar contracts from day to day to go out and hustle to get business to keep their doors open in those southern markets. And I know I'm going to open up the lines and let a few callers I have ask you a few questions about that. But I wanted to bring that into the picture about the situation in North Carolina, because if they're going to put together that collaboration in that market, that's the great part about BOSS. I know that they will be at the table making sure that some of our African American based firms will be able to get some of that opportunity. Is that what this is about?
Absolutely, 100%. They're a great group, as you know, and that is their mission, right? They want to make sure that African American businesses are involved and engaged in this process of a clean energy transition. And the way to do that is to get the dollars, because this is a moment. We know, we recognize we may be on borrowed time, and we have to get these dollars out into the world so that it's contractual and that nobody can rip it from us.
Well, I know that I've got about 10 more minutes of your precious time, but I want to sort of bring a caller on in this way in our green room. I want to bring it from the green room into our living room, and so he can speak. Caller? 601-985-8352. Would you please
speak? Mr. President, that would be Will Shirley, yes, sir, with Sundial Solar Power Developers in Jackson, Mississippi. I thought you may have had another caller in front of me, but anyway, I would like to, first of all, applaud you, sir, for bringing such a talented individual with foresight into this industry that is willing and ready to help our children and our current businesses expand their opportunities in the solar arena. As you know, Mr. President, I've been on the same track for several years. So I have a couple of questions. Ms. Shalala
Morissette. You got it.
Shalala Morissette. Is that French?
Yes. So my last name is French Canadian. Yes.
French Canadian. You're doing, as I have discussed, your positioning with the president before this call on yesterday. I have to agree with him that you're the linchpin, so to speak, to finally some action being executed. And so I have a couple of questions. We down here in Mississippi are experiencing and has forever experienced, rampant situations in our families where money is not available. What I'm saying is our state is really a poor state. And what we've done, when I say we, that is a group of collaborators in Mississippi, has recognized that solar money is out there. And we've created a collaboration called Solarize the Delta. The community benefits plan, I was not fully engaged in, but I'd like to definitely execute that plan, execute or at least apply for that funding, which I'm not sure totally of what it's about. I heard some of the things that you said about the community benefits plan, which are very exciting to me. So we're going to execute on that level. So now, in terms of workforce development and under the community benefits plan, I'd like to get more involved in that too. So I guess I don't really have a question for you, because this is a heck of a lot of good information that we can use in our development down here, where we do have wide range support from different organizations across the country for our school children, solar knowledge, bringing solar knowledge or renewable energy knowledge to our school children, bringing training to our universities in this plan, doing work for the analysis of different projects that are needed in the Delta of Mississippi. So we're going through the full scope of that. And so I like to keep in touch with you, because you have questions. I mean, you have answers to certain questions that if I can call you up, spend 30 seconds with you, get the answer and move on, I would appreciate that if that's possible.
So that's a yes. You can always stay in touch with me, but know that I am actually coming to your state in the very near future. I am planning with your MBDA office early next week on a date to come there. So I will make sure that I keep you abreast of the official date, and we'll get this posted on our website. If you go to energy.gov/diversity, that's our office, the Office of Economic Impact and Diversity, and you just drill down there on Minority Business and Workforce Division, and you'll find information about everything that I'm doing. We are updating those websites to make sure one of my goals is to be the leader in resources for minority business owners on how to do business with us. So we have different departments that do something similar, but they're not me. So know that it'll be a little different. It'll be really useful information that lives there. Again, I'll be coming to you very soon, because I am not coming in the middle of summer. I'm going to be honest with you, it is too hot, and I can't keep a hairstyle already. So know that. So let me get to, I love bringing you practical information. You talked about community benefits. So that's a layer that's within the IRA.
A young lady and brother Shirley, we got about 5 more minutes. I got to get this question in because I should have programmed more time, but this woman's time is so valuable. I know that 6 minutes would fly by. I didn't even take a commercial that I normally do in the middle of the show. But one of the exciting things that y'all are doing at the Department of Energy, Shalea, y'all have a hiring corps, Clean Energy Corps. Could you please sort of talk about that, because y'all have over 1,000 positions that y'all are trying to fill all around the country, from stakeholder engagement leads for the U.S. Secretary for Infrastructure, Internal Affairs Director for the U.S. Secretary for Infrastructure, Budget Analyst Office, Clean Energy Demonstration Office, Chief Examiner Office, and the list goes on. So in a few minutes, can you please share with our listening audience something about this exciting opportunity for people who may be interested in getting employment with the Department of Energy?
Absolutely. So where to get all the details on this? If you go to www.energy.gov/CleanEnergyCorps, so CORPS, you'll see that it's a very, I'll call it a clean process. There's 6 steps to actually apply for any of the roles. So you don't go into the rabbit hole of USA Jobs, whatever the website is that we all internally and externally, we really hate it. We know that it's old, it's antiquated, so we came up with a different system. But within that, we have been provided by way of the bipartisan infrastructure law direct hire authority, which means that we can move the process along very quickly. So we're looking for everything from communications folks to engineers to finance and accounting, grants contact management, human resources, IT, legal, legislative affairs, operations research, physical science folks, project management, public policy, safety, occupational health, program and portfolio management. So we need the full scope of people, and you're absolutely right. We have about 1,000 jobs that will be coming out this year. But if you go to that website and you scroll all the way, probably about midway to the middle of the page, you'll see that you can actually apply. It'll say apply now to the Clean Energy Corps. You click that. You'll see it's from start to finish. There's 6 steps. What's interesting about this is we are not necessarily pulling you in for a particular role. We're pulling you in to assess your skill set in how we can really get you the right job. I love that all the people doing the interviews actually have gone through bias training, and so we are checking their bias. If you have a brain, you have bias. We know that, and so we're making sure they have the right training to do these interviews properly and really give folks an opportunity to get in. We know we're the second largest federal agency with all of our federal family members.
Sister Shalea, I don't cut you off with the clock on the wall saying that's all.
Yeah.
I want to thank you, really, and I need to get a commitment where we can get someone from you or somebody from your agencies to come on this podcast and other platforms that I tie into to sort of get to keep this information flowing to our community. So I think I got a number here that I can reach you on, 240-597-8092. If that's it, then I could give you a call and maybe we can discuss this off air. But I really want to thank you for taking time from your very, very busy schedule to be a guest on Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. You will not be a stranger to this show. Brother Shirley, thank you once again for calling in and directing your question to this dynamic young champion we've got. So we've got to support this sister and her boss up there, Shalonda Baker, because they are really, truly trying to do something to help our African-American-based firms. And I say that unapologetically. I have nothing against anybody or no races or no creeds, but I'm a Dr. Claude Anderson disciple. And if you know anything about Dr. Claude Anderson, we're unique people, and I'll leave it at that. With that being said, thank both of you for taking time for your busy schedule to join me this day on Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. Is there anything else you'd like to say, Shalonda, in closing?
Shalea, thank you. Thank you for doing this work.
I keep getting Shalea and Mrs. Baker, your names confused. I apologize. Go right ahead.
No worries. No worries. Thank you. Thank you for this work. Thank you for having me. I would love to come back. Please invite me. I have so much more information to share with you that is practical that folks need to know about. So feel free to invite me anytime. Happy to be here.
Thank you very much. Brother Shirley, is there any way people you want to put out about your website and your company?
I do, sir. Our company is Sundial Solar Power Developers in Jackson, Mississippi. Website is www.sundialsolar.us. My personal cell phone number is 601-985-8352. You can get me at any time on that. But I'd like to say to Ms. Morissette that this is what you bring is a change in the economic outlay of our Black communities once we have the appropriate information to make the appropriate needs. And that is what has been missing. We need champions like you throughout the federal government dealing with our different industries. And so I really applaud you, Ms. Morissette, on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank both of you. And with that being said, the clock on the wall says that's all. Look, everybody that listens to the show, as we close, we always tell people to go in peace. But we don't want you to meet us back here. We want you to beat us back here. Because normally you know that this show is every Wednesday at 11 a.m., but because of Mrs. Morissette's schedule, I did a special situation this morning on Friday morning, so stay tuned. We'll be bringing more information on the energy industry. And always remember, everything starts with energy, everything ends with energy. And with that, so everybody have a blessed day as we close another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control. life is a song we're singing.